Today is July 8th, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover Ukraine's refinery campaign against Russia, which has produced a 16-fold drop in Russian territorial gains alongside a 19-fold spike in casualties per square kilometer, and we'll look at how the Strait of Hormuz ceasefire has quietly handed Iran de facto control of one of the world's most important choke points. Start with a number that should stop you, 30.43 square kilometers. That's how much Ukrainian territory Russia captured in the whole month of June 2026. A year earlier, in June 2025, Russia took 481 square kilometers in the same span. That's a 16-fold contraction in ground gained, according to ISW's July 1st offensive campaign assessment. Now pair that with the cost of taking that ground. In June of last year, Russia lost 68 soldiers for every square kilometer it captured. This June, that number was 1,298 soldiers per square kilometer, a 19-fold increase in casualty efficiency, according to CSIS's comparative analysis. The strategic calculus here is brutal and simple. Russia is spending nearly 20 times the blood to buy a 16th of the land. Most of what Little Russia did gain, roughly 77% of June's advances, came from a single grinding push into Kostyantynivka, where forces have crawled forward at about 50 meters a day since October of last year. That's some level positional warfare, and multiple analysts are making that comparison explicitly. What's driving the collapse isn't just Ukrainian resistance on the front line, it's what's happening behind it. Dr. Jason Smart's tracking suggests Ukrainian strikes have disabled an estimated 43% of Russian refining capacity, part of a campaign estimated to have cost the industry $13.5 billion. United 24 Media reports Russian crude refining fell 25% year-on-year in June to a two-decade low, with gasoline output down 17% and roughly a third of refining capacity sitting idle. This is the same logic that shaped Allied strategic bombing of Axis oil infrastructure and World War II fuel, not population centers, proved to be the more war-decisive target. Ukrainian doctrine appears to have absorbed that lesson directly. More importantly, this is bending Moscow's domestic politics. Gasoline sales are now restricted in more than 30 Russian regions, and there are reports of Kremlin-mandated fuel quality degradation just to keep supply moving. Belarus has stepped in, boosting gasoline exports to Russia by a reported 141% since 2025. And India is covering roughly half the gap, but that still leaves Russia structurally short. Meanwhile, Q1 war spending reportedly hit $83.2 billion, roughly half the entire federal budget, putting Russia on track to blow past its annual war budget by at least $28 billion. Vladimir Putin has now pushed his so-called Fortress Belt deadline from September 1st to December 31st, 2026, the 15th postponement since 2022. That's not a sign of confidence. That's a sign of a government trying to manage expectations without an off-ramp. And yet Russia can still reach Kyiv. Mass missile barrages killed at least 30 people there, according to Ukrainian officials. A grim reminder that battlefield stagnation on the ground doesn't mean the war is winding down in the air. Now shift south to the Persian Gulf, where a ceasefire is producing an outcome almost nobody predicted. Peter Zeihan's assessment from late June describes the Strait of Hormuz, a waterway that normally carries somewhere between 100 and 150 ship transits daily in each direction, and about a fifth of global oil flow is now functioning asymmetrically. Roughly 20 tanker departures a day over the past week have released an estimated 35 million barrels of previously stranded crude. But inbound traffic has essentially frozen. Fewer than 15 ships entered the Gulf over the weekend, and only about half of those were tankers. Here's the strategic calculus here. Iran is reportedly the only actor moving vessels through the strait without restriction, and Tehran is now discussing transit tolls, apparently coordinating with Oman on the mechanism. Zeihan calls the arrangement lopsidedly favorable to Iran, despite Iran's battlefield losses in this conflict. The U.S. Navy, meant to be the guarantor of open transit, is functionally underwriting a status quo that benefits the one actor it was containing. This is the shifting geography of power in miniature military defeat on one front, operational leverage retained on another. Saudi Arabia and the UAE have kept oil flowing through Ras Tanura and Fujairah, but Zeihan is clear that this is a one-time clearance of stranded inventory, not new production. Riyadh had already pushed its east-west bypass pipeline above design specification just to cover over 90% of lost Gulf export capacity. If Iran formalizes a toll regime, it becomes an informal tax on global energy trade, raising insurance and shipping costs on Gulf origin cargo, and setting a precedent other choke point states could copy. There's historical precedent for this kind of outcome. Ottoman control of the Bosphorus under the Montreux Convention, Egyptian control of the Suez Canal before nationalization in 1956, cases where administrative control outlasted the military outcome that was supposed to determine it. And this is unfolding during an Iranian leadership succession following the death of Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, which raises real risk of miscalculation by IRGC elements operating with less central oversight than usual. Briefly, two other threads worth tracking. At NATO's Ankara summit, allies are staging what the Associated Press called a big reveal, a showcase of new procurement meant to demonstrate progress toward President Trump's 5% of GDP defense spending target. Secretary General Mark Rutte insists this is transformational rebalancing, not American retrenchment. President Zelensky, for his part, cited a 90% Shahed drone interception rate and claimed Russia is absorbing roughly 30,000 casualties a month while pushing for European co-production of Patriot interceptors, explicitly rejecting a 2030 timeline as too slow. Building on that regional picture, in North America, the USMCA review deadline passed without a clean extension, and Canada, currently the only G7 economy in technical recession, hasn't even scheduled formal talks. CSIS's Diego Merican-Bitar describes Washington behaving like a permanent negotiator, content to let prolonged uncertainty extract concessions over time, drawing an explicit parallel to the 1994 free trade area of the Americas talks, which countries treated as an 8-year paid vacation before the whole initiative collapsed. And in the Middle East, two bombs went off outside President Macron's Damascus hotel just after his departure, wounding 18, according to Syrian state television, with no group claiming responsibility yet. If this is confirmed as targeting Macron directly, it would mark a serious escalation against Western head of state security during Syria's fragile post-Assad transition. The specific regional signal to monitor in the next 48 hours, watch whether Iran and Oman take any concrete step toward formalizing a Hormuz transit toll mechanism. A public announcement, even a preliminary one, would confirm that ceasefire ambiguity is hardening into a durable choke point control arrangement, with direct consequences for global shipping insurance rates and for how other states with geographic leverage over trade routes might behave next. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your Core Brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.